This is a car show, but it's also more, because cars connect us to every part of our lives.
Families, careers, hobbies, and adventures we never expected. So you should have a car you love. And we're here to help. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
Hello, everybody. Happy Tuesday. I actually had to check in that it's going to be Tuesday when you hear this because we're recording on April Fool's Day and nothing can be relied on. If you read any car news yesterday, just consider it was just realistic. And if you didn't notice, we released our drag race video. For the second year in a row, we did a stupid drag race video on April 1st. This one was the Ducktacular. And what I love is, thank you guys for getting in on the joke on this. It was ducks running down spring runoff on my property, which is ridiculous. It's part of my property that is just, I can't do anything with because it's spring runoff. So that sounds incredibly like it's huge, but there you go. That's what's happening. It's a ridiculous video that we just did as a family, and then we got video out of it, and it kind of worked. But you've given us great ideas for next year's Ducktacular.
I guess it's now a theme, isn't it? Because we got to integrate DuckTale spoilers.
We got to do a lot of things. We got to do a lot of things. And since it was our family just trying something out, you weren't represented, unfortunately.
I was not represented.
So we got to solve that. We got to get a whole passel of ducks in there.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
A lot of track days going on this coming weekend. We're starting with Willow Springs in the Southwest. That is Friday, April 5th, 2024. Then Laguna Seca. Todd will be at Laguna Friday and Saturday, April 5th and 6th.
Which is crazy.
And then I'll be at Sebring on Friday, Sebring International Raceway on Friday, April 5th, 2024, and New Jersey Motorsports Park Saturday and Sunday, 6 and 7. I'll be there with Chance, and we're having a Cars and Coffee from 9 to 11 a.m. on Sunday, April 7th, 2024.
I am jealous that you're doing that, actually. I'm not jealous of your travel, but I'm jealous of that
it's
event.
It's a lot of travel. Cool. Yeah. And come on out for the Cars and Coffee. Would love to see you bring something cool. And you still have a chance to register for all of these track days. There is still space available. HookedOnDriving.com to find a track day near you.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Whatever car you're looking for and wherever it's listed, you'll find it with AutoTempest.com. AutoTempest.com brings together results from all the top used car listings anywhere online to save you time and help you find the perfect car. It even lets you compare with nationwide results from Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, and far beyond your local area.
Plus, you can now get email alerts for your search, so you're sure not to miss anything. You can even price and find new cars from nearby dealers. That's why AutoTempest is now the official sponsor of all our test drive videos. We use it to search for new cars or used cars wherever they are.
So when you're doing your drive homework, or you're chasing your next family car, or you're just browsing so you can see what's out there, go to AutoTempest.com/everyday so they know we sent you. AutoTempest. All the cars, one search. We are continuing with our best of series. This episode is going to be Lucid through Porsche, so Paul's going to be happy. But we're going to dive right in here. There's a couple of high-end brands you included in here, but I played along anyway. There's some stuff way out of the everyday driver garage, but it's okay.
I included McLaren. I love it. Even though we didn't touch on Ferrari very much, but McLarens we have driven, and
true.
So I did include
That's
them
fair.
In this round.
Good.
Let's jump right into Lucid Motors, whose stock price on the NASDAQ is currently trading at $2.89 per share as of this recording, down from the 2021 highs of $65 a share. If you go to their website, it is actually interesting, very clean, very nice. They offer two models, the Air and the Gravity.
Yes. The course, which is essentially sedan and SUV. Is it me or is Lucid, an electric startup car company, trading at where it should be?
Yes.
Because of what they've actually done and the cars they've actually sold. Yes, I am looking at Tesla. The point I'm making here is this is a company that makes an interesting product. And I got to admit, Lucid is probably in my top three cars I want to drive this year.
Agreed.
Across the board.
Drive,
I don't care what it's powered by. Yep. Lucid was, now it's funded by the Saudis, right?
The public interest fund of Saudi Arabia, yes.
Yeah, their attempt to diversify beyond just oil. Mm-hmm. But the engineer geniuses behind the Model S, which I have said many, many times was a watershed moment and is the best thing Tesla's ever done. And then they go over and they make Lucid. Now, I'm paying attention already when you tell me this. I am fascinated by the Lucids. I think they're very interesting. I don't think this is a car that's going to become commonplace. I'm actually a little bit surprised they've survived this long because they're clearly bleeding cash. But I want to drive the Air. I'm not that interested in the Gravity, but the Air just looks awesome. The Air looks like, I know this is obvious for me to say, but the Air looks like you made the electric Phaeton.
That's a good comparison.
I'm intrigued by it. So it's not a car for me. It's not a car for most people. They're wildly expensive, huge battery packs, lots of space.
Let's dive into how expensive. Starting with the Air, the pure trim level of the four Air trim levels.
Yes, of course.
According to the website, that starts at $69,900.
Seems almost affordable. Still too high, but almost affordable. Wait, we're only going up.
Well, over here, the very highest trim level is called the Sapphire. Uh-huh. I would like to drive the Sapphire. That starts at $249,000 on the website. $250,000 for the Sapphire. The difference.
Five times more expensive almost?
Four times more expensive. Yeah. The difference is the Pure is rear-wheel drive only. Mm-hmm. And the power output, because it goes way up to 1,200 horsepower for the Sapphire. But the published range on the website, the difference between the bottom and top trim levels from Pure to Sapphire is 17 miles. Mm. The two variants in the middle actually have more range. At the very top end, you're using a whole lot more power, and they acknowledge that. And then at the very low end, they're stating range. You know, here's the cheapest way to get into a Lucid product.
Yeah.
The difference in range is practically negligible.
Yeah, sure. They do have some that are claiming about 500 miles worth of range, which is pretty astonishing. Nobody else is claiming that, which is amazing. I mean, I'm really trying to figure out, is there anybody else that offers the same model with that much range and price?
Not to
my knowledge. 60 grand to 250 grand, and it is fundamentally the same bones. Yeah. That's astonishing to me.
Yeah, the Touring, I believe it's a Touring that has 411. No, sorry, it's the third. It's the Grand Touring model. Pure, Touring, Grand Touring, and then Sapphire. Mm-hmm. It is the Grand Touring you're referring to, 819 horsepower and a 516-mile range. But then you go up to the Sapphire, 1,234 horsepower.
I could probably get away with almost 900. I think that'd be enough for me. I think it'd be okay. Yeah.
I mean, where does it stop?
It doesn't, unfortunately, yeah.
So it's interesting to dive into the valuation of this company. Mm. And that really interests me. And the growth premium is based on weak foundations, according to a March 5th, 2024 article on Seeking Alpha by JR Research. I do read Seeking Alpha. The Saudi Public Interest Fund commitment to buy up to 100,000 vehicles could lift the valuation significantly, they write, but it's predicated on Lucid's ability to deliver much better than expected production. Mm. But it isn't just a lack of production scale that is harming the company, it's also weak demand, and that contributes to Lucid's overly speculative thesis.
Yep.
The word is cash burn. That's the term.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
The analyst term for lack of profitability. Additional Seeking Alpha article by SL Investments from March 19th, 2024 says that Saudi Arabia has invested an immense political interest in the success of Lucid.
Yeah, I can see it.
Which means it's not going anywhere anytime because the country has a vision to make its economy sustainable in the world of post-petrochemicals, which is also not going to happen.
It's a PR ploy. I mean, let's be honest. And they're spending money on that PR ploy. And I think they're looking at how Tesla got valuated and thinking, well, that could work. But again, Tesla was a cash fire. Tesla is GameStop. Remember the GameStop
Lucid's
thing?
Lucid's Carvana?
Maybe. Because when GameStop is valued way beyond what actually seems to make sense on the books? I mean, Tesla's been that its entire existence. It's come down some.
Lucid is AMC Theaters.
There you go. All right.
A little bit.
They're doing a product, but they're not worth what the stock says. I mean, it's interesting. So I'm not going to pretend anything about understanding the stock market, but I do understand if you don't sell much, you shouldn't be worth much. That's my base understanding of the world. Lucid doesn't sell much and isn't worth much. Tesla doesn't sell much. I mean, they sell a decent amount now.
They're
successful. Enough to match their value? I don't know.
From a design standpoint, though, I think Lucid is really great. I actually do like the Gravity. You can open the frunk and sit down.
Yep. See, the Range Rovers used to do this at the back.
Well,
Lucid's decided to do it at the front.
You can do it at the back of the front here, too. But the Lucid interior, the Gravity interior, they're actually really well designed, and they do look interesting. And that's been my major issue with any EV. Mm. It's too stark and cold, and it's modern without being inviting. And Lucid has definitely overcome that with their interiors.
It looks very luxurious and inviting.
The exteriors, the Air is interesting and a little bit more eye-catching than the Gravity. The Gravity being an SUV blends in too much. But the interiors on both are really well executed. A lot of thought goes into it, and they're not the Polestar, which we'll get to here shortly. They're not the stark Polestar interiors. They're certainly not Tesla interiors. There's a lot of warmth, and it's the shapes that are pleasing to the eye. That's what we want to be invited with. It of course is craftsmanship and materials, but the shapes, it's gotta be friendly and welcoming. And I do like the interiors for that, but the, $289 for their stock price right
and
now.
And a really expensive car. We have to move on to your not-so-secret love, Maserati.
As a matter of fact, I was reading a post on Instagram by Jethro Bovingdon today, who traveled to the U.S. to redrive the MC20, and it struck me as he was liking the MC20. We've got videos out on the MC20. Mm-hmm. You know how we've talked about the Alfa Romeo Spider as the ideal car at 7 or 8 tenths on not a racetrack?
Yeah, sure.
That strikes me what the MC20 is. Okay. I don't know that I'd want to have it on. I want to have the
at
MC
the upper
Extrema
price point.
On
it's the same idea. I see where you're going. Yeah,
but at a higher price level, it does have a particular Maserati flavor to me, and that is race car underneath the barely concealed exterior. It's got a suit on, but you know it's really a racing driver underneath, and it drives that way. It drives with the chassis. You can feel that racing chassis. And so the MC20 is, of course, on my list. I really do like it a lot. But if you're going for max horsepower, or you're going for max output, or there's other cars to choose. I get that, but it doesn't make the MC20 not enjoyable.
That's interesting. That's a good point. My issue is I have two on my list here. One is the MC20 and the other is the Gran Turismo as good options.
It's the other car on my list.
From Maserati. But my issue with both of them is you have to count on getting these for a deal, because I think the list price
just
on
wait.
Both of them... There's too much competition and they're not quite worth it. Yeah. I mean, the MC20, which I liked driving, and to your point, it does feel like the Alpha 4C Spider, but at the next jump up.
At a higher level,
higher wallet, enjoyable.
If you put
it
in that
enjoyable.
Headspace.
Yeah, for sure.
But the problem is the way it drives, you feel the race car breeding, and you know if you're going to go racing with it or go on a track experience with it, there's others you would buy before that one.
I agree. The MC20 at $250,000 and up, which is pretty much where they are, I don't know that you pick that. If it were 150 to 180, I think you really, really want one. And I feel the same way about the Gran Turismo. Yeah. At $200,000, it's like, really? But if that car were 120 to 150 and 60, which it will be in a couple of years, that's really compelling.
I've already found them at that price.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
And it is compelling. I mean, a gorgeous proper GT car, the category of which Maserati pretty much invented.
Yep.
All-wheel drive in that shape, lots of power, good materials, and it is quite fun to drive.
Agreed.
That's what
much better than we
thought.
Us. Yes.
Those are the two that are the best cars Maserati builds currently. I have hopes that the Levante and Ghibli and Quattroporte are revised soon, and they need a dose of the styling from these other two.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the Quattroporte you had is still one of the prettiest sedan shapes ever.
Agreed.
The current Quattroporte looks like that car never existed.
They didn't
just
reference
become
it.
Like boxy and bulbous, and I want to click on the Quattroporte and be like, oh, it's gonna be a pretty no, that one's not, and the one you had was gorgeous.
I agree. That's what Maserati needs to go back to, is something beautiful and sensual, and the MC20 and Gran Turismo both do that. They're the best car they build. The Grecale, it was fun, but it's so easy to justify almost all of its competitors.
Absolutely.
That's the problem with it. Yep. It's fine, and it has a solid entry into that category, but then when you start comparing it, that's when it kind of lets you down.
I'd buy many other things before that one, yeah.
Let's move on to Mazda. There is lots to like here.
They're just the king of value. Mazda is ruling right now for me on... You get in it and you think, well, this is much nicer than I thought it was going to be for the price. Just
that's
initial experience when you sit in a Mazda product is it feels like that, which I'm very impressed by. Luckily, though, Mazda just doesn't make things that are nice to sit in. They actually drive pretty well. Not all of them, but most of them are pretty good. I have to call out the CX-30 real quick, because even though I wish it was actually just a hatchback, and I can't believe we're doing slightly lifted, cladded hatchbacks and calling them SUVs, in turbo form, that was surprisingly fun.
I agree. The Mazda 3 turbo, the straight up Mazda 3 turbo and the CX-30 are both excellent.
The Mazda 3 in hatchback turbo form is a really good car.
It very much is. Of course, the MX-5 RF and straight up MX-5,
of
that
course,
should go without saying. Mm-hmm. benchmark cars there. The CX-5 has been on our list for many, many years, and it is still being built. I wasn't the biggest fan of the CX-50. I feel like it didn't have what the CX-5 did for me from a driving perspective.
It's a slightly different, believe it or not, it is a slightly different buyer. I still like the CX-5. Mm-hmm. I think the CX-50 has its place. The problem with the CX-5 is it's been a standout in that segment for a while, but it is getting old now. I want them to do a new, brand new CX-5, and I'm curious if they're even going
it's
to.
It's got
to
be coming.
So I'm wondering about it with the now with the fact that they're going to CX and then two digits. The 30, mm-hmm. the 70, the 90, is the CX-5 going to become, well, there is a CX-50, but it's more off-roady. So what are they going to do with the CX-5, which is more luxurious? I'm curious if that's going to exist at all, because it is a standout. The CX-90 is a superb 7-seater. It's excellent. It feels like you bought a luxury vehicle
Agreed.
At any price. Agreed. You really want the straight six. I don't think you want the PHEV. I don't think it's good enough. We watch our test drive on that. But as far as to be in, superb.
It's let down by that hybrid powertrain, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. It needs to be better to be able to compete. And then you change power plants and you get the inline six and suddenly it's all solved.
Yeah, I agree.
Everything about it. We had the turbo just recently. Uh-huh. And we really, really liked it. But there is another level above that with more power. Turbo S, like how Mazda's taking a page from sports car manufacturers the world over to be able to do that. And the CX-90 is really superb. They build some great stuff, and I am ready for that inline six and lots of other cars.
Yeah, that engine has to be amortized out to something else. I'm very, very curious to see what it'll do. I hope they do some really cool GT car or maybe something that is that is like a mid-sized front-engined rear-wheel drive, like sports car, sports sedan thing would be awesome.
Something with RX in the name?
Well, it'd be nice, except the rotary people are going to scream if it's not a rotary.
Yeah,
that's the
but
problem.
Then try that inline six and
I agree.
It'll all get better.
You'd think. The only real critique I have on the obvious standby of Mazda, which is the MX-5, which is great. It is initially tuned from the factory to be quite soft, so you kind of have to be used to that reality.
It is.
But the biggest issue with the MX-5
fortunately, there's a community that can solve that
for exactly.
you.
Do you fit?
Yeah.
Because if you fit, superb. If you don't, there's not a lot of really good stuff you can do. And as much as I like the MX-5, and I really, really do, I do not fit. And that's always a bummer.
See, I've got McLaren on the list as next here.
I know.
Because we have driven the Artura, and I fell in love with the Artura.
Yep.
It's a tough call for me between the MC20 Maserati and the Artura, but I think I would still go with Artura.
Would you?
Okay. I liked the MC20, and I've got a soft spot for the Maserati brand now, but I think I'd go for the Artura.
At same prices, I'd go Artura as well. Yeah. If you could get a screaming deal in the MC20, it helps it. But the Artura is really special. Watch our Price of Fun piece. We both really enjoyed that. And we haven't driven it yet, but I like the fact that that is the beginning of their new architecture. Mm-hmm. When they did the MP412C, terrible name but has history. When they did that one, that was the architecture for every car that followed up until the Artura. So now they're resetting everything, and so it's the Artura. And then they updated the 720S, which everybody thought was brilliant, but we never drove, with the Artura architecture to make the 750S. And I'm guessing, based on what I know about the 720 and having driven the Artura, that the 750 is probably brilliant.
I think that's a watershed moment for McLaren, but we're also hearing rumors of a hybrid V8 in the form of the 750. Man, that would be a lot of power.
I actually did like the MP412C. Terrible name, but I liked the styling. I liked it better than some of the styling that came after it, actually.
It's kind of holding
up. I really think it's an interesting car.
Yeah.
The very early ones were wildly problematic. They got a little better over time, but I think that might be an underappreciated value supercar. It's not the greatest ever.
Yeah.
There's a lot of interesting technology. It's their moonshot that they came out of nowhere. I think the later versions of the MP412C before they became other things are kind of interesting, but they are a bit of a dice roll.
Agreed. And I think that we have identified McLaren as the in-between brand for both of this that would do everything that we love about Porsche and everything that we love about Lotus.
I said when we drove the Artura, I feel like McLaren is what Lotus should have become when it grew up. I feel like the feel of their cars, that's what Lotus should have become. Lotus with a blank check and good management would have been what McLaren is doing with cars right now. I would have loved that.
And as much as I love Porsche, there's still such a special thing about McLaren
that is
a different flavor, and I definitely aspire.
When we move on to Mercedes, I have to bring up something that I thought was really funny. We're going to all of these sites for all these manufacturers. And you and I have to clarify something. We've been talking about how surprised we are by some of these sites, but the thing you have to understand is we're looking up the media sites generally. Okay, when we drive right. all these cars, we're going to the right. media sites, which are structured totally differently than the front-facing, here's our product sites.
Right.
And for this exercise, we've been going to, here's our product. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we're getting on all these websites where we may have seen the behind-the-scenes media stuff often recently, but we're going to the big flashy, don't you want to buy something here site? So I did what we all do. I put Mercedes into the tab.
Ah.
And guess what came up on the Google search?
Not Mercedes.
Genesis. Genesis was the top ad. I was like, you really are paying for that. Somebody searches Mercedes and the top thing that pops up on Google is Genesis as a paid placement. It's like, that's pretty good. And then I got on the Genesis site and then things went all kinds of directions.
Then you are on the Mercedes site, which is MBUSA for the United States. I feel like that is that kind of hinders Mercedes in the US. And I've noticed that their website in the US is not it's not all that. I'm not impressed. I want better information quicker.
Okay.
And it seems like an ode to their cars rather than a customer facing, let me tell you and get the pertinent information about this model in front of you as quickly as possible. It's more like, we know we're Mercedes and
you're not here by accident. You would have wound up at Genesis by accident, but you didn't come here by accident.
But MBUSA is very specific. Yeah, and now that you're poking around, you're just kind of cruising around and reading some stories and looking at cool images and you're enjoying the Mercedes world. You're enjoying the experience rather than shopping because
interesting.
If you're shopping, you already kind of know what you're looking for.
Okay.
So you're kind of meandering over here in the EQ land and then you're meandering back and you might touch AMG and maybe something too expensive. And then you might end up kind of where you want, but even that information is still hard to come by. Of course there's a configurator, but it doesn't give you the specs, the full details that I want to get out of everything. It's just, the information is ultimately there. It's just hard to get to quickly.
Interesting. Okay. There's a website critique. I'm going to say on the Mercedes, I have to give one blanket statement right now. And that is they don't make a single EV that I would ever consider.
Agreed.
I think their entire EV lineup right now is ugly, expensive, and has too short a range.
100%.
Now, look, there are other manufacturers struggling with their EVs. You know, GM famously was going to be all EV and then went, wait a minute, hang on, maybe we shouldn't do that. So, I mean, this is not only a Mercedes-Benz problem, but we've driven a few of their EVs, and I cannot justify them to anyone. Even if you want to buy EV, I wouldn't send you over there. They've got other good stuff. I like the GLE, which is an SUV midsize. I really like the GLS, which is their big seven-seater. I mean, you pay a lot for it, but it is such a nice place to be. The GLS.
In AMG flavors.
Yes. Well, but even not, though. The GLS I've liked in every single form we've had it.
That's true. And it's never cheap. The 450 is great.
It's never cheap. Yeah. It's always at least $100,000 or so, but it is very impressive. It really is the seven-seater version of the S-Class experience, and if you want the big executive experience, you just go drive an S-Class and see if there's any reason you should go somewhere else. If you can afford the S-Class. I mean, we drove the Genesis G90. We recently had a test drive. I did a POV of the S-Class. There's a lot of similarities in those two cars. It's clearly, I mean, all the way up to the ads on Google, Genesis was looking at Mercedes for the G90. Of course, the problem with Mercedes is they are all probably about 40% more expensive than you expect them to be. Whatever your price is that you're thinking, go up like 40%. You're getting in the realm.
But that's the Mercedes customer. That is part of the Mercedes experience.
I guess. Yeah.
And it's only the lower end models that aren't necessarily AMG or just something that is base spec where you start to question the dollars. Anything above that, of course. This is why it costs so much and I'm enjoying myself and I just want it.
Sure.
That's part of the current Mercedes experience. And they have really turned themselves around since the decade of the aughts.
Yeah. We were not fans when we started this show, and they have really revolutionized themselves. But I feel like every 10 or 15 years, every car company is a little bit different car company than it was prior. And we've definitely seen that with Mercedes, for sure.
But you're right. Everything that is either straight gas powered or hybrid, the mild hybrid, really love.
Their mild Mercedes. Hybrid, 48-volt mild hybrid system is actually excellent. It's really good.
It's really superb. Yeah. S-Class, E-Class, I'm with you. The GLE, the GLS, the CLA 45 was such a fun car.
Surprisingly fun.
Bunch of money, but I still really liked it.
Can you get one at 45 used and then you got a
gem?
That
would be hot.
That is a really cool car.
The new CLE Coupe very much interests me.
Okay.
The AMG GT, the new one,
okay,
is tap dancing on my Porsche 928 hot buttons.
I can see that. That makes sense.
Tap dancing.
Yeah, I can see that.
I want this car because it does have the back seat, even though it's not usable, but that's not the point. But the big problem with it is, well, there's two things. The weight, but also the proportions have changed from the last AMG GT, which I really love.
See, now you've bumped into what I was already thinking, and that is the new one I want to drive. The new GT I want to
drive. I'm going to like it, and it will drive lighter than the weight suggests.
Yes.
We will be able to find that weight when we drive it, I'm sure, but it's going to be very impressive, and I'm very much looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it. Well, I definitely want to drive it, but I will say this. The Prior, the AMG GT Prior, the two-seater, I liked in every single trim I ever drove.
Yeah.
That is a phenomenal car.
Superb.
It turns my head to this day.
Yeah.
Anytime I see one anywhere, Cars and Coffee, racetrack, doesn't matter, I'm just like, that's an incredibly good car. And
yes,
I've always enjoyed driving. I think I've driven three or four trims total, including one on track. And it didn't matter.
Yeah.
Yes, there are more track-focused ones. There are more luxury-focused ones. I don't care. I just would take one of those cars.
That embodies the Mercedes brand for me. The prior generation GT.
Sure, I see it.
Slinky, beautiful, sensual, gorgeous to look at, powerful, great to drive, amenities, well-built. I want one of those badly. Of course, Porsche gets in the way, but you know, I still do want one of those.
I like the new GT and your 928 overlapping. I hadn't thought about that, but
that
I
is
totally
just
see it
hitting
now.
Me
I
so
see
hard.
It
I keep
sure.
looking
yeah,
at this.
Yeah.
I'm going, oh my gosh, that is the modern manifestation of a 928.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the last car, of course, is not a car, but it is the G63. And that is a soft spot for me, man.
See, don't care.
Oh,
don't
man.
Get it. Don't care. Yes.
What a great truck.
The door sounds like a vault. Move on.
The 2025 version apparently has that much-needed IP interface upgrade. The infotainment got upgraded, which is desperately needed, and they smoothed out a few styling elements, and I'm all about the G63.
I am not there with you.
I would so drive one.
You definitely would.
I mean, they don't offer a manual, but I could go Mercedes pretty easily.
Yeah.
They offer some special stuff. Of course, back to price, right?
Mm-hmm. Speaking of price, we'll come back down to earth with Mini, and I only have one car here. Get yourself a Mini Cooper two-door. I just done.
Yeah.
The Clubman's interesting. The Countryman, I get it. They're trying to do an SUV. There's not that there's anything wrong with the other models, but just get the two-door Mini Cooper, ideally as high up the food chain as you can, and get a manual. And if you can get John Cooper Works bonus, be happy. Blessings to you.
I totally agree. They do offer the John Cooper Works package and styling in all of their variants.
They do, yes,
which is
for
great.
Sure. Uh-huh.
And the Ford Clubman JCW is actually kind of intriguing because
I hear it.
You get a little more space and it's still that fantastic JCW. I really like the JCW. When we recently drove one, now been a couple of years, just so entertaining.
Every time I drive one, I'm pleased by it. I mean, even though they've gotten significantly bigger than the one I had, the R53 that I had with the manual, which I sometimes miss that car. That car was the right size for a Mini to be. So it's gotten bigger, but they're still really fun.
I suppose my lingering question is, where does Mini go from here? Because you cannot continue to expand the product line with a name like Mini.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do what Porsche has done over the years. Let's do an SUV, let's do a sedan, let's do a bunch of different things. A lot of car companies have embraced a broadening of their portfolios, and it kind of works.
Yeah.
Some cases better than others, but when you're still Mini, I know it's a niche brand, but still, I mean.
Well, I hear you. The next thing for them to do is go all EV, and they probably will.
They probably will. It's time to take that summer or performance car out of the garage and get it ready for driving season with upgraded brakes. PowerStop's Z26 Street Warrior Brake Upgrade Kit features drilled and slotted rotors that will keep your brake temperatures low while resisting rust. Included in that kit are carbon fiber ceramic pads that will give you durable, reliable stopping power without all that nasty brake dust.
Head to PowerStop.com and fill in your vehicle's information into their easy-to-use brake finder to find complete kits and components for your car. Join us and thousands of other drivers that have already transformed their vehicles into a stopping powerhouse. PowerStop is brake upgrades made easy.
The next on the list is Mitsubishi.
Mm-hmm.
The next one after that is Nissan.
Well, hang on. I have connective tissue between these two,
Nissan and
Mitsubishi. But I do want to stop on Mitsubishi for a minute and say these two brands, Mitsubishi and Nissan, I had the same curiosity moment. I actually used their configurators on both sites.
Did you really?
Because I was fascinated by the cheapest car they both make.
Okay.
because this okay. is, I hate to say it, but this is your buyer. Mitsubishi and Nissan, even though Nissan has other products, Mitsubishi barely does. But
they have hand dryers for public restrooms.
They have large semis, for that matter, and sometimes televisions. And moving on. But Mitsubishi sells the Mirage, a catastrophically ugly car that is not helped by terrible wheels. I keep wondering when I look at it, how much better would it look like just on better wheels? But it's a catastrophically ugly car, but it does come in multiple colors. It starts at $17,000. I went and configured one without buying, like, I want extra floor mats. I bought, like, legitimate
That's
stuff.
That's paint to sample on Porsche's website.
I loaded it up. I know. I loaded it up. Loaded. Can't put more on it that makes any sense. $20,000 for a brand new car.
You're right. That you get okay. a warranty with it,
you
and
get
it's
a warranty
brand new.
And yeah. it's brand new. Yeah. It's not interesting, but there it is. Meanwhile, over at Nissan, the Versa starts at $16,000.
Okay.
I loaded it up similarly to the Mirage, and it was $21,500, brand new car from Nissan.
Okay, so pretty close to each other.
And I have to say, there's a part of me that wants to get the two and compare them legitimately.
Okay.
Because these are the cheapest cars in the U.S. Let's get the two cheapest cars in the U.S. Let's put them with something that is equivalent dollars and have a conversation. Because
Maybe.
The reason you're buying one of these, and we've talked about this before, because you know exactly what your monthly payment will be. You have an approximate of what your gas is going to be. The budget is very tight. This is a reality. I get it. And then if anything goes wrong, it's covered. There is nothing beyond what you put aside for your car in your budget. This is why these things sell, the Mitsubishi Mirage and the Nissan Versa. This is why you're buying them. So that's a reality. That's a market. And let's be honest, the person that is buying that car isn't going to spend $16,000 on a used 5 Series or a used Alfa Giulia or a used even Acura product. They're not going to do it because they need to be able to count on anything goes wrong. It's covered. So I'm just curious. I've mentioned it a few times on this series. A part of me is a little bit intrigued by these bottom of the market cars. And Mitsubishi, as much as I just want to walk right by that dealer, and Nissan the same, they both have one.
I'm really trying to get excited about driving either of those cars. I'm trying to imagine myself.
You know what?
Trying to get excited.
Don't shoot for excited.
Okay.
Shoot for like mildly intrigued. Excited's too far. like research for science kind of interest. Okay,
it's all in the name of science.
It's all in the name of science and everyday driver. That's what I'm saying. Don't go for excited. You don't need to be excited. It's okay.
This is a company that has the Evo 10, and that is on my list, but it's probably too old to make our list.
It is too old to make the list. That's what's too bad. Yeah,
the Evo 10.
It was great.
Fantastic
Brilliant.
Car and their heritage. Mm-hmm. I was trying to justify Mitsubishi as the performance brand, but they have models that they could make performance brands, I suppose, but I was just trying to justify why does Mitsubishi, I guess the only reason is because of that price. The reason they're still around.
Yes.
Is because of that price.
And they sell multiple versions of their current SUV, and it's for the exact same reason. I mean, the last time you and I drove a Mitsubishi product, and we weren't kind, and it was it was their SUV, and it was interesting how many people noted in the comments, not that they thought it was a good car and we didn't. They noted the incredible deals that they or someone in their family had gotten on one. The MSRP was this and they got this much off. There are deals out there and there are buyers for those cars.
Look at it from the other side. That's fine and that's nice to get a deal.
Everybody
likes to get a deal. But as the CEO of Mitsubishi, the product planners, you want to make some money here.
Yes.
Is it worth keeping the brand around? Could it become what N is to Hyundai? Could it become a performance brand? Because they could very much, it's already still in enthusiast minds.
Yeah, you're right.
Same Mitsubishi and, you know, not currently, no, it's not great, but that still exists as a possibility. And I'm trying to justify that. But I will move on to Nissan, where we're talking about the car company that has taken what they already had, make improvements. And the cars that truly are the standouts are the ones that still are a good price, good value. And they didn't do a whole lot to change it, but it's dramatically better. Frontier tops my list.
I agree. Frontier is a real victory in what they did when they updated that. They updated the engine in the last gasp of the last model. then they carried that engine over into a brand new body mm-hmm. built on the old bones.
Mm-hmm.
And when we drove it, it was actually a launch here in Park City. When we drove it at the launch, we both looked at each other and like, this is significantly improved. I think in that compact yeah. pickup segment, it is surprisingly competitive.
I also think the Pathfinder is a compelling choice in the world okay. of SUVs.
Yeah.
It's got a longer lifespan here than what Nissan is currently doing with it because okay. the Pathfinder name suggests multiple models like the X-Pro versions for Kia,
sure.
continuing to build it out as a true overlander or a okay. 4Runner competitor. Yeah, yeah. It is not currently a 4Runner competitor. I feel true. Like the 4Runner is going to very, very soon be reintroduced mm-hmm. and the Pathfinder is going to again be left further behind. But as it is now, you get into it and it's almost underpowered, but not quite.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like good value for what you're getting.
I agree.
And yeah, I like it for that reason. And it truly is a three-row. It's got great space, great amenities, and it just works.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have that Pathfinder heritage, but I feel like Nissan should have pushed this one further.
Mm, interesting.
Maybe they will.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe there's still room to grow here, but as long as Nissan models are around, I guess we do, 14, 15 years.
There
plenty
are,
of time.
Well, yeah, speaking of things around 14, 15 years, let's talk about the GTR. Is there going to be an R36?
I mean, I was going to say, rumblings. Does Nissan need to build a subsequent
generation? There's rumblings
about
an R36. Will it be electric? It'll probably at least be electrified.
Certainly, yeah.
But here's the thing, and I've talked about this before. When this dropped, 2009, 2010, it was the Tesla Model S Plaid of its era. I want to put it in perspective for you. It was the car that everybody on YouTube drag raced against something, and it beat everybody.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Porsche was like 6 months behind before they had a Turbo S that could beat the GTR. This is how much of a throwdown it was.
A lot of companies were caught flat-footed.
This was 2009. This is 15 years ago, folks. It's still around. It now costs twice or above what it did when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It has had refinements, but nothing revolutionary. It is a variation on the car they released 15 years ago that was such a throwdown. It is now very expensive, old, and still quite cold to drive. Wildly impressive. You sit there the entire time boggled that it just did that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I'm not compelled by it. I never have been in any of the versions we've ever driven. I'm incredibly impressed and perfectly happy to be like, oh, that's impressive, and go over and drive something else. What is Nissan going to do? Because this is in such stark contrast with everything else in its portfolio. Even the Z car, which is a retread of the prior Z car, still isn't in the category of the GTR. This is not a perfect analogy, but the GTR, I'm going to say, is to current Nissan what the Phaeton was to Volkswagen when it came out. It's like you've got all this stuff that kind of feels like a product line, and then you got this weird thing under a light in the corner. You're going, what is that for? I understand the heritage, but it is way out by itself now.
I agree, but it's not far enough. And for a next generation, it needs to have double the price tag and be as desirable as some McLaren or Maserati or even Porsche.
Well, but I'll go the other way. What if it were 100 grand and blew everybody's minds again?
The problem is the Nismo Z.
I agree.
If you go 70. The other way, I want it to go lighter, stick with the same power, maybe all-wheel drive, but certainly rear, make it a real enthusiast car. Go back to that Skyline recipe.
Yeah.
No, I know it's a Skyline, but still.
I'm with you.
The lighter, smaller Skyline, but why? You have the Nismo Z.
Mm-hmm.
And if you made the Z all-wheel drive, what's the point of having two cars? I feel like they're in a bad place because they need to be able to completely change everything. The Corvette had to change platforms to be able to survive and justify the
and
next
jump up.
Corvette.
Yeah, I get it.
It went mid-engine. So what if the GTR became mid-engine and now it does compete? It doubles the price and competes against the McLarens and Corvettes of the world. Maybe it's a Z06 true competitor.
I see where you're going. I mean, it's sacrilege, but I see where you're going.
It is, but if it doesn't, and it sticks where it is in the market, what about that price point and that recipe is compelling to buy over any of the other hot car brands?
See, you've really hit on it, because what the problem is that the Z and the GTR are in the same spot. The problem with both of those cars right now is I don't think you buy one unless you're already a fan or already an owner of a current version.
Yes.
The GTR or the Nismo Z. And I like the Nismo Z, except for it's $70,000.
Yeah, but it's gotten really good.
It's very good. It's the Z that they should have dropped when
Agreed.
They dropped the Z. It should have been just like
but
the Nismo
GTR
at 50
comes
grand.
Down off
you.
Its lower price point.
Well, the Skyline and the Z car, the 300ZX, they sold at roughly the same price points at the time.
Fair.
You had the all-wheel drive 2+2 versus the more, you know, slinky.
Fair.
Not all-wheel drive. They existed simultaneously. They can, but the problem is that I don't think either of these cars are bought by anybody but a current Nissan enthusiast, and they need both of those legendary names to break out and be like, you know what I'm considering? I'm considering going over to Nissan.
Yeah.
You're not going to.
No.
And the
no.
other thing is, I don't think people buying a GTR or a Nismo Z would consider anything else in the Nissan lineup.
No, and that next GTR needs to bleed over into Infiniti again. Infiniti is...
That's interesting.
They need something from the next GTR to be a halo car. Power plant, drivetrain, something to turn into an Infiniti halo. Wow, that's an Infiniti?
It's the Mercedes GT competitor.
Yeah.
You were talking about the 928 GT. What if Infiniti had a GTR-based competitor?
True.
Interesting.
They
I
were going
where
in
are.
That direction
yeah, yeah,
with the Black Series of everything, and they had great concepts like we talked about, but they lost it with that, with that concept that had the GTR engine in it. I know the business case has to be made, but for the GTR to survive, if you just do another version with a little bit more power and it's still all-wheel drive and it's still world-class, but it's still about 160,000, it's going to turn into the Acura NSX.
Wow.
And the Acura went mid-engine. It went in the direction of the right recipe. Holy moly, triple motors, hybrid, lot of power, mid-engine, crazy styling. Why didn't the NSX sell? Why?
Because it wasn't what people expected, though. The prior NSX was the stripping down of culture.
If they had a mid-engine less expensive, the NSX would have sold. But if they did that to the GTR, it won't.
Interesting theory. Okay, I hear you. I hear you. Shall we move on to Polestar? Do we like Polestar?
The distinction of being the company that blurs the line between car and SUV, they blur the line the most. Between cars and SUVs.
That's true. Yeah.
I had to really study, like, is that a... And they're kind of proud of it, too.
Oh, that's exactly the point. Absolutely. And the problem that I have now is when Polestar first got launched, I felt like they were going to carve a place for themselves on the market. And now, with the 3 and 4 being announced, I'm just like, so you're just essentially everybody else. I hate to say it, but look, isn't the Polestar 3 the same chassis as the Eletra?
Yeah.
Why would you buy the Polestar?
I'm sure that I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, I'm sure the Polestar is going to be a tiny bit less expensive.
Styling.
I'm not a guy that actually is all excited about the Eletra. I'm confused by the Eletra. But if it was Lotus Eletra versus Polestar 3, just based on what I've said so far, don't you buy the Lotus? Even without driving them, they have a unique look. And every time I see one in person, I'm like, oh, wow, there's a Polestar. And then I realize I don't care.
I have blistering criticism and I have high praise, both for Polestar.
Love it.
The first one is the Polestar 4, the one with no back window. So does the 5, but the Polestar 4 has no back window. And on the website, and I'm quoting the website, removing the rear window and adding a rear-facing HD camera enhances the interior space and the rear-rear view. In other words, audience, don't believe your lying eyes, believe us.
We know you can't see out of the back, but we got you. We got you. Yeah,
no. It's not what you think. This is in the top 5 of the stupidest marketing statements by a car company.
Okay. Wow. That's up there.
And
that's
the design,
impressive.
You've blocked the view out of the back and tried to justify it, and nobody believes you.
I like it.
And you're continuing on with the Polestar 5 concept.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
However, the Polestar 6 is absolutely gorgeous and has the potential of giving the Tesla Roadster, the new one, a run for its money. Because it's
good,
I think, better looking than the Tesla Roadster. A little bit just subjective there, but this concept is actually fantastic. It's a blending of what the first Tesla Roadster should have been, built on the Elise chassis.
Mm-hmm.
And it has the tech potential to better the Tesla Roadster. I'm talking from a driving standpoint.
Okay.
I mean, one second, 0 to 60, who cares? That's what Tesla sells. It's all hype anyway.
Yeah, I hear
But this feels actual reality to me. And this kind of shocked everybody. It was like what Ford did when they came out with the next generation GT.
Yeah.
My gosh, you guys are working on our GT. Oh my gosh, you're going Le Mans racing with it. And oh my gosh, fantastic. Mm-hmm. And how is this a secret? Everybody was shocked by the Polestar 6, the Roadster concept.
I see it. Yeah.
Brilliant, good looking. That sets the tone because all of their styling up to this point is interesting from an exterior standpoint. Yeah. But as I was alluding to earlier, the interiors feel severe.
Mm-hmm.
They don't feel compelling and they feel cold and off-putting. If this is the future, I don't want to be in a Polestar. But Lucid has made it very warm and inviting, and the shapes are very beautiful and sensual. It can't just be jarring shapes in the interior. I don't want to spend time there. And then if there's no back window, I really don't want to spend time in that.
I'm on the website right now, and it's talking about the Polestar 6, this really cool 2+2 convertible
concept. How cool is that?
3 seconds 0-60, plenty. 155 miles per hour top speed target, plenty. 800 horsepower, that should be enough. 300 plus miles of range, dual motor, and 800 volt electrical architecture. All that sounds really good. It is good looking. I do have to say one thing that makes me laugh. You can still sign up, even though the first 500 slots are taken. The indicative price of the final car is $200,000. That is a very interesting sentence, because that means at least 200 grand. At least. The indicative price of the final car is, sure.
But you bring that price down and you make it accessible to more people. That is interesting. That's the recipe that you and I have been talking about forever. A mid-engine look.
Mm-hmm.
It's an EV. Wow.
This is what something Toyota should do with the MR2.
Great to drive. That has potential right there.
The problem with all of these EVs is they have to be so expensive, they cease to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. Then they're really struggling with that. Porsche, I may have to go first because Paul may be here a while.
You go first.
I'm just going to say something on behalf of automotive journalists that doesn't get said enough. Porsche, newsflash, there are other companies also making good cars. That's my newsflash. Okay. At all price points, there are other cars worth driving do not have a Porsche logo. Porsche does not have they don't own good cars. They make good cars, but they aren't the only ones doing it. I just want to put that out there, because if you get in a room of automotive journalists, you'd think otherwise. Eventually, it all boils down to everything sucks but Porsche. And I have been in many of these conversations with automotive journalists, and I kind of have to leave the room, because not everybody has 80 grand plus to buy a good car.
80 grand?
I'm saying that's like the base, and then everything else goes up.
Say,
because the other thing you have to know
seems low
is,
to me.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but it is true.
Those are rookie numbers. Got to get those numbers up.
Porsche makes a excellent version of every one of their models.
Uh-huh.
That doesn't mean that every one of their models in every form is good, but they make an excellent version of every one of their models. The other thing you have to know about Porsche is, whatever you think the price is, and I'm even saying if you think you know, whatever you're imagining the price of that new Porsche to be, bring $25,000 on top of your assumption right now and then go look at what they really cost. This is the Porsche reality. The base Macan is not worth it. Don't get a base Macan.
I agree to that.
I think the Taycan is only interesting in Cross Turismo form, though I would love to drive the updated version. But the Cross Turismo, which has actually, because the problem with the Taycan is, the reason they made that GT with no back seats is because the one with the actual back seats is awfully tight. I mean, like, you're going to have trouble getting in there.
It's the Taycan Murizo.
It's kind of a 2+2. It really is. So the Cross Turismo at least gives you a little bit more space. And then, yeah, just remember that base price is just, it's a lie. You will not get a Porsche for whatever the base price is you've seen. Because we've all done it. Oh, the Boxster starts at $49.99. No, it doesn't. $59.90. No, it isn't. You're going to walk into a Porsche dealer, okay, and the cheapest car on the floor is going to be 80 grand.
At least. Rookie numbers. I'm telling you, we got to pump those numbers up. It is not necessary for me to go through all the models. So what I'm going to do is simply rate all six models that Porsche currently has on their website.
Like it.
But what I will start out with, and this answer is going to vary for everyone listening, whether you like Porsche or not, when you come up with your personal answer, that will explain why Porsche is so popular. And the question is, what other car company can you think of that so embraces its heritage and supports its heritage and still wants to make you feel like you're part of the family? Like, oh, those old models, don't look at those.
That's fair.
Those are old ones. We want to sell you a new one.
They keep them all running. You're right. And they have love for them too.
Love for them, keep them running. But then when you ask from a driving perspective, why does everybody who owns a classic Porsche, why do they love it? Why do they want it? And I'm not saying there's one answer. Mm-hmm, it varies for every single one of those owners, but it all comes down to love for that car. And I love the way it drives. I love the experience. I love the insert reason here. There's very few, if any, other car companies that have pulled that off.
Well, and I'm going to add,
how did Porsche do that?
Interesting.
That's why the love for Porsche exists.
Yes, I also think they have a few automotive journalists in their pocket. There's that going on as well. But I will say this, though, to Porsche's credit, and building on what you're just saying, they make fantastic used cars. People have a tendency to take the Porsche product line and think of it like Mercedes, like Range Rover, like BMW, like one of these very high-end cars you paid a lot of money for, and in 5 years, it's a nightmare. And that has not been the experience of you or me or any of them, anyone we've known with an older Porsche product. I am surprised. There is a 20% markup on anything you need to get done from what you're used to when you fixed your Honda.
Sure.
But the parts are out there. Mm-hmm. The mechanics are out there. And if you give them the, if you replace the parts that wear out, and I'm not saying that like something wears out every week. It's not that. But if you replace the parts that need to be fixed because they actually wore out, Porsches are surprisingly robust and usable used cars. I have to give them huge credit there.
I'm going to link the higher purchase price new to that.
I think that's probably fair.
There's extra engineering. There's things we don't know in the design and build and engineering process. Different choices that are made for longevity's sake rather than just building a new model and selling the new model and ignoring your
history. Let's hope so. Yeah.
There's other models out there that certainly reflect this, but I don't think there's another brand that encompasses all of its models with so much passion and love. It's not just motorsports. It's how it drives, how it looks. Name your reason. And that is what makes Porsche so special in customers' minds. But you're right. I completely agree with you. There's other car brands that I love, that you love. There's other brands out there. There's other models that are brilliant. Competition is healthy. Competition is a good thing.
For sure. Yeah.
All right. So rating top to bottom, 911 is first on my list. I do want to own a 911 Cayman Boxster. The 718 current model is definitely second. That could be interchangeable because I do love the mid-engine concept so much. And they need to never go away from that, in my opinion. Cayenne is third on my list as far as something that is beloved and so now linked to the Porsche brand.
Interesting. Okay. All right.
It comes before the Panamera, which is fourth on my list. Mm. Macan is fifth. And Taycan is last. And I have to be perfectly candid, and that is the turbo convention, the naming convention. When they pulled that out for the very start of the Taycan model, you lost me there because that's not, I know you associate it with luxury, but that's not what anybody who's an enthusiast associates with motorsports or actual how a car works.
They're just using it as, oh, this means faster.
So
faster,
now,
but more expensive, better.
The new Taycan Turbo GT with the Vysok package starting at $230,000 on the website.
For a two-seater.
It's a Taycan Marizo is what they've done. They've built the Toyota GR Corolla Marizo edition. You know, they just have a roll cage back there. So yes, it's quicker, faster, lighter. Do I want to drive it? Absolutely. Am I intrigued with it? Yes.
They have a four-door car with fewer seats than their two-door car in the 911. Seriously.
Wait.
I don't know that anybody else does that. They have a four-door with fewer seats than their two-door.
That's a magic trick.
That is a magic trick. Only Porsche could pull that off.
And also, what other car company currently hanging an engine behind the rear axle, sticking with it and making it so competitive?
Making it work
still,
in spite of itself, yes.
That is also part of the magic. But the Taycan is representative of the tech, that Turbo GT tech. I feel like we're going to see that manifested in the Cayman and Boxster, maybe some of it in the 911 and some of it elsewhere. But I get it. They started with the Taycan because it was an easy place to start. The platform already existed, and let's build that up and make it superb. And then hopefully that would translate into a smaller, lighter package like the Cayman.
Yeah.
But that Cayman mid-engine, there's simply nothing like it. The rotation of that car, how fun that car is to drive, in some cases better than a 911, even though I desperately want a GT3 manual. But what other car company makes you just ache with want? You just want it. There's other cars I do want, but then when it comes to the Porsche brand, I just want it. And that's what many people will say. That will be many people's answers.
Well,
I can't put my finger on it, but I know I want it. All the history, the longevity, the love for their models, the encompassing the history and making old Porsche owners feel as important as brand new customers.
They do that very, very well.
That's part of the magic too.
I have to give them credit on that for sure. I can't believe how long we can make this discussion of brands last. We're actually not trying to extend it out, but it's just so much fun to talk it through. I really do love this. Rocco, you're right. I had an amazing time making the Ducktacular piece, and it's actually educated us on doing more later. But I wanted to talk something real quick that Flermit put out here as a question. He put it out on Instagram. He said, do we think that the recent spike in vehicle prices is going to help cheaper auto cycles get a chance to get a foothold in the market? Now, if you don't know what an auto cycle is, this is any of those in-between cars, okay? They're not motorcycles. Many of them have some sort of kind of canopy roof. They're often three wheels. Auto cycles come in multiple shapes and sizes, but they all kind of meet that idea. Generally, it's tandem seating. It's front and it's a front and rear passenger, all these kind of things. And you know what? I don't think there's any hope for auto cycles. And here's my reason. Here's my reason is because if you want to drive a motorcycle or a moped, you are that person. You want to drive that. You see the benefits. You're going to buy it. Awesome. Most everybody else, they aren't interested in being exposed to the elements, and they aren't interested in the potential danger of having one of those out on the road with big whatever it is. Because I think the average buyer, which is what you need if you want to sell volume, the average buyer, the Elise, the Miata, these things are already too small and not enough of a quote-unquote real car for them to buy. They're all buying SUVs because they want to be safe and protected, and it needs to feel big and protective around me. The auto cycle is going the wrong direction for mass acceptance. So what's possible is whoever cracks the really cheap, accessible car that actually is good. You know, Tata tried it. BYD is talking about crazy cheap electrics. Yeah. Who can really crack an affordable, and I was talking about the most affordable cars being sold just today, who can crack a really affordable, also reliable, decent car? They're going to sell them as fast as they can make them. They're not going to be able to make them fast enough. Yeah. Auto cycles are not enough. I hate to say it this way, but not enough of a real car for a mass market to ever take them on. Price irrelevant.
Got a question from Dammy O on Facebook. Dammy, thank you for writing. He's got a comment. He says, on a recent podcast, we asked, who is the buyer? I asked, who is the buyer for a Jag? Dammy says, well, it's him.
I love this. He's got a great car. Yeah.
He's 40 years old. He's always loved Jags and Aston Martins in his younger days. He drives an old Jaguar now and aspires to own an F-Type V8 as his attainable dream car someday. Mm-hmm. His money, no object dream car would be an Aston Martin DB12. Wow. But since that will never happen, he will happily settle for an F-Type. Because he thinks they're criminally underrated.
I see it. I totally see it.
I completely agree with the F-Type. But that's a sports car that is a niche car that is really targeted at all of us enthusiasts. All of us enthusiasts. Of course, we love the F-Type. But I'm talking about the SUVs and the sedans. Mm. I saw an E-Pace actually the other day.
An E-Pace? Short of the press car we had, I don't think I've ever seen one.
I finally saw an E-Pace. It was a couple of younger drivers, and they were probably one of their parents' cars.
Probably, yeah.
And I'm just going.
You saw it here. So it was their parents' car that stays here at the ski house. That's what you were seeing.
It could have
been one of those ridiculous things. Yeah,
the big sedans. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're compelling at all.
Interesting. Okay.
But the F-Type. Okay, Dammy. Let's say Jaguar pares its product line down. That is the opposite thinking of CEOs and product planners who want to build more.
Okay.
What if Mini just built the two-door?
They should.
And that's it. And Jaguar just built F-Types and successors from here on out.
Okay.
They're not making money on the SUVs anyway, so why don't we just go with what sells? Mm.
Guitar Kid 987 says, how does he convince his mom to try a sedan instead of an SUV? But here's the twist. Her chief complaint is that her knees don't like to bend as much as necessary to get her into a lower car.
Yeah.
This is the reason, one of the other reasons that SUVs keep selling. I've joked about it before because SUVs are just a situation where you stopped walking.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, if you have bad knees, bad hips, you don't want to get up and down from something low, it's going to be hard to get you in a car, but I'm going to give you one that doesn't make any sense to me, but it might make sense in this situation, and that is the Toyota Crown.
Oh.
Which is, I did it in the test drive. I literally opened the car door, and I subconsciously, for the kind of car I was in, put my foot down far enough to have reached the pavement, only to realize my foot is dangling about 3 inches above the pavement still. This is a sedan, inexplicably at SUV height, the Toyota Crown.
You're right. Guys, thank you for all your questions. We really appreciate it. Write to us everydaydrivertv@gmail.com for all your Topic Tuesdays, car debates, car conclusions too.
Yeah, for sure.
We appreciate your social media questions as well.
Hopefully we'll see some of you this weekend at some of our Hooked on Driving events. And if not, we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you, guys. Cheers, everyone.